The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Andre, do you think that Toyota's reputation for reliability has been canceled
what?
By the internet? Yeah, exactly. What is right? The recent what? Flurry of problems has caused people to lose faith in what has generally been regarded as one of the most reliable brands out there.
Right. Well, how about we discuss this on this episode of TFL Talking Trucks?
Yeah, we can go into what happened with the Tundra, what people are saying is happening with the Tacoma transmission. But before we do that, I think there's a few other topics we should hit.
Definitely, because a lot has been going on.
Yeah, and let's start with our friends and our supporters at Patreon. If you guys want to help support us, we've got a lively community over at Patreon where we do behind-the-scenes videos. We give you a discount on our new T-shirts like this one.
I conquered the Eye Gauntlet.
Uh-huh. I like the one yes. You were wearing yesterday, the one that says
Diesel greater than gas.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
And of course, you can help support the team so that we can keep giving you videos like this, because if you've been following what's going on with a lot of our competitors,
yes,
Donut Media, Hoonigan, people have been leaving because of investor, stress.
Shenanigans
on the creator team. So we don't have investors, Andre. We just have you guys.
Yeah, you guys are our investors.
We have no VCs. We have no corporate overlords. The downside to that is our pockets are pretty
dry,
pretty shallow. So if you like, TFL, and you want to help support us, and you want to keep us from, going the way of the other companies, because we live at the best and fall of YouTube revenue, we would love if you guys supported us over at Patreon. Where do they go, Andre? Just click on the link below?
Sure. And patreon.com/TFLcar. That's okay. Our only page there, because we do have many different channels, but TFL Car is our landing spot right there on Patreon.
Well, we probably should change that to TFL Studios at some point.
It's probably hard to change now. Probably it's like written in stone.
Yeah. So one of our patrons, Andre, was not happy when you tested the Ram versus the Ford on the Denver 100. What did he write?
Okay, yeah, so here's the question or comment.
Yeah.
On Patreon. What gives? Testing a 2023 F-150 long bed against a 2024 Dodge short bed.
Hmm.
By the way, this is not a 2024 Dodge. It's a 2025 Ram.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
So if we're parsing every single thing.
Well, that's the difference between influencers and journalists. We try to get our facts straight.
Okay.
We don't always succeed, but we really try.
You should have been using a 2024 F-150 with the same size bed and the same setup. So basically, it's a long comment that basically says that you picked two vehicles that are not very equivalent.
Yes, and tested
them. Okay, and tested them. So,
and that sentiment is out there quite a bit, because people wonder why we don't compare apples to apples. So, Andre, why don't we compare apples to apples?
Well, let me just go back to this video,
yeah,
right?
Okay, yeah.
So We have the new Ram 1500, which is, you could call it a Dodge if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Ram 1500 truck, 2025 model. It's got a new Hurricane engine, and it came as a loan, right? So when we get a loan vehicle from a manufacturer, we don't control the color of it or the configuration of it very closely.
Well, no, we don't control any of that, actually.
No.
they send us what they want to send us.
I mean, we have a bi-directional communication, right? Sometimes manufacturer says, which versions of the truck do you want to test? And we tell them our wish list. You know, I did say we needed a Rebel, and we did have a Rebel last month. And then I said that we need a towing truck as well, or a more basic truck, and they sent this Bighorn Ram 1500 to us with a towing package.
And the logistics of this are not, you make it sound simple, but they're never that simple.
Well, because
multiple emails, phone calls, text.
We're also in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Near Denver, yeah. Which is not the
hub of fleet.
Of Detroit. If we were in Detroit, it would be a little bit easier. If we were in Los Angeles, it would have been a little bit easier. But then we wouldn't have the mountains. We wouldn't have our environment and our testing procedures.
Yeah, and then if you guys wonder, there's probably, you know, hundreds of vehicles in the fleets across America, but there aren't that many. It's not like the Denver press fleet or the LA press fleet has 15 Rams with 14 different configurations in 10 different colors. It's one, and it's the one.
Or two.
Yeah. And it depends on, of course, what the manufacturer is trying to promote in their fleet. We never get to choose a color. I wish we did, because it's very frustrating, because oftentimes they send us black or dark colors, which just don't pop on camera. But anyway, we got this truck, and then we think to ourselves, let's do a comparison. And Andre, do manufacturers like comparisons?
Yes and no.
Good answer. I would say more no than yes. In the 15 years we've been doing this, sometimes they like comparisons, but for the most part, that trend has gone away to they do not want to feature their brand new truck against their competition. They just want, they want the opera singer to be on stage by itself,
yes,
with the spotlight on that, and they don't want it sharing the stage with something else.
That's true. But also, I think there's a sentiment with some manufacturers that they say, we're proud of our vehicle, so by gosh, you know, compare it to anything you want because it's going to stand up by itself and to the competition.
So
there is also that.
I would point out that like 10 years ago when we went on programs, this is when they introduced a new vehicle, about maybe 30% of the time they would have the competing vehicles there, maybe 40. I haven't seen that now in 5 years.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, yeah. I have, you know, where they actually have the competing set of vehicles.
Although,
yeah.
So I went to a Ford Ranger event in Utah.
Yeah.
This was a few months ago. And they had a Toyota Tacoma at their event.
And could you drive it? And
In a very limited way. We could backup trailers. You know, they were showing the backup systems,
yeah,
right? So in some limited way, some manufacturers.
So what they were saying is ours is better.
Ours is better.
Here's
than
why.
Yes.
Yeah, you can try the inferior Toyota system.
Yes.
And but if you want to be like, hey, can I take this truck and go tow with it? They'd be like, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
so
I, you know, this new, going back to this comparison, this is a new turbocharged engine in the Ram, right? So I really wanted to put it up against an EcoBoost turbocharged engine in the Ford, because that has been kind of the standard, right, in the segment.
Yeah.
It's been around since 2011, 13 years on the market in various iterations of that. And there wasn't one in the fleet,
yep,
right, in the press fleet.
And that's the other thing. The trucks in the fleet are the new trucks. There's never, if the truck is brand new and redesigned and it's a new generation of it, it'll be in the fleet. If it's a current generation, it'll be in the fleet when it's new. After that, maybe after 6 months,
yeah,
gone.
It's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you out there who think that what we can do is just call up Ram, Ford, and Chevy and say, hey, we need, you know, a half ton with a 373, short bed with this engine option,
and this trim.
That will never happen. And the other thing that probably won't happen is, even if we spend a year trying to set up a comparison test where we actually do all the hard logistical work behind trying to get all three of those trucks, chances are the week before, one of the manufacturers will call up and say, oh, by the way, the truck you wanted got pulled from the fleet because blah, blah, blah. Sorry, we can have it next week, after which, of course, the other two trucks are gone.
Yeah.
Because we only get them for a week. So it's very hard to do apples to apples, and especially with pickup trucks because there are so many configurations, right?
And variations.
How many variations of a truck can probably hundreds if it's a Chevy or Ford, full size.
I mean, if you go down to the every option, there could be hundreds of thousands of different
How about just engine, model type, four-wheel drive versus two-wheel drive, right? Even within that very limited set of parameters and axle ratio, there's probably dozens of configurations.
Because in Ford land, we have, four different power options, three cabs, three bed lengths. You multiply that out.
How many models? Dozens. Like six models, right?
Yes, six trim levels.
Trim levels, yeah.
So when you multiply that out, that's dozens, if not hundreds, of different configs.
So when we get a truck and we want to compare it, then we start what we call the TFL scramble here, where we try to find as close of a competing truck as possible. And that could be from a dealer that we work with. Sometimes that can be from an owner that we work with. However we can get something. And keep in mind, we only have that truck for a week and actually maybe 5 days.
Yeah, maybe two in some certain cases.
Because the weekends people are off. And so getting two trucks that are relatively compatible is in itself pulling a rabbit out of a hat. If you don't believe us, just go out there and try to find a comparison of all of the full-size trucks. They're not out there.
This is Scott Campbell from the Stupid Things for Love podcast. I have a 7-year-old son, and the biggest mountain I climb every day is trying to put shoes on this child. And I'm so grateful to Skechers for making the only shoes my son will willingly put on by himself. Their slip-ons are amazing, and he doesn't have to deal with laces. He doesn't have to deal with anything. They come in the perfect color blue. Thank you, Skechers, the comfort technology company. And you can find Skechers everywhere, Skechers.com, a Skechers store, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, so
they don't exist.
And we will continue to try to do this.
Except for Andre's work.
We will continue to try to do this because I was able to get this F-150 that was a little bit older. It was a year or a year and a half old. It had some miles on it. It had a different axle ratio. And it didn't have the color I wanted.
Yeah.
Right? But I think it's still fairly interesting when you have two vehicles at the same day and the same doing same tasks together, because there is a little bit of a comparison. If we did one truck today and another truck a week from now, the weather is going to be different. You're not going to get the same environment to compare these trucks against.
Yeah, so anyway, we pull out all the stops. Andre does a hell of a job to be able to actually get competing vehicles. And we do that knowing that it can jeopardize the relationship we have with the manufacturers, because oftentimes, which is also a new trend, and this is, I think, has to do with influencers and the fact that now manufacturers can pretty much buy the reviews that they want by going to influencers and saying, I want this and I want the review to say that. I'm going to give you this truck. And you see a lot of that. And you see a lot of people who do both, who are influencers and who are reviewers, and that line has become very gray. We make that line black and white. So we're always on the journalist side, but oftentimes the manufacturers, even though they understand we're journalists, they'll still come to us and they'll say, what are you going to do with it? And that question to us is a line we will never cross. In other words, they're asking us, what's your plan for the editorial? And our response will always be, we're going to do it. We're going to do a fair and honest review. And if you want to know our editorial plan, then you're basically trying to control what we do with the truck. And I understand that they want to do that, but at the same time, that's basically saying to us, this is what we want you to do with it. And if you don't do this, we're not going to lend you the truck. And so, like we said earlier, they don't like comparisons. And so it becomes potentially a relationship issue when we start doing comparisons, because the manufacturers are like, well, if you give it to TFL, they're going to put it up against a competition. And you know what? We don't want that opera singer out there with another opera singer. We want our gal out there shining in the spotlight. And we
have really good relationships with truck manufacturers and most manufacturers, in fact. And I think we appreciate it. It's a relationship. I think it helps everybody, right? Because we do real world testing, so we're out there. This it was 100 degrees that day.
Yeah, anyway,
so and that's it was pretty warm.
If you had done that with the one truck on Tuesday and then waited a week until the next truck,
it could have been 70 degrees outside.
It would have changed the. Anyway, I think we beat that horse.
Okay. So by the way, remember when we did 5 mid-sized trucks at once?
Yeah,
that was hard.
That was so
5
hard.
5 mid-sized trucks at the same time.
Logistically,
that was cool.
It's just hard for a small team to also have 5 drivers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you want basically.
You know who does comparisons? Those guys in Australia.
Yeah.
They do like 12 trucks at the same
time.
Yeah.
What are they called? What's the name of their YouTube channel?
Car Expert. .au.
Yeah. Very impressive, guys.
You do some impressive work.
Maybe it's a different relationship, or maybe they get them from manufacturers and owners and. You know, dealers.
And dealerships.
Yeah. Anyway, it's impressive when they do that.
All right, so we got that question taken care of.
Okay, so you just came back from Germany.
I did.
Yeah, what were you doing in Germany, Andre?
So ZF invited TFL to attend what they call the Global Technology Day. Basically, it's like a showcase of the latest technologies. And by the way, I said it both ways. I said it ZF and then ZF. Mm. And a couple of people gave me a hard time about this because they said it's supposed to be ZF. Mm. But I was trying to be conscious.
So ZF would be the British way.
Yeah, it's a German company, right? So they say usually ZF. That's kind of the British way of saying it.
Because they don't say Z, they say Z.
Yes.
Which is
And also
British.
The same goes true holds true for Canada.
They also say Z?
Yes. Like our friend Steven says Zed.
Okay, and did they say null for zero, or did they say zero?
I don't know.
Do they say lift or elevator?
Lorry?
Tomato or tomato?
Potato?
Potato.
So, I'm sorry about that.
We're going to break out in song. Keep the opera theme going. You want to sing that song, Andre? Can you?
No, potato, potato.
You say potato.
I'm sorry. I'm not a singer.
Oh, neither am I. Sorry about that. We apologize. That was pretty horrible.
If you wanted to hear singing, you can
all right,
listen
so,
to something.
So let's go with the American Way ZF. So what did they show?
So and by the way, how many of our listeners and viewers do you think know what ZF is?
I think most people don't know that the manufacturers have all these subcontractors that build much of the parts that they put in the truck. So the latest trend has, of course, been that instead of manufacturing many of the parts, the manufacturers contract out the axles, the transmissions, major components.
Steering components, brake components.
Of the vehicle, except for Tesla.
A great example of it, for example, a new company, INEOS.
Yes.
Right? They have a, I call it best of breed, where kind of a manufacturer goes out there and they scan the landscape and they pick really great components from different companies and they actually incorporate it into one vehicle. Like INEOS chose the BMW engine.
Sure.
They chose like different axles, different suspension components, and then put it all together.
And that's why when one technology breaks out, usually in the legacy manufacturers, they all end up kind of jumping on the bandwagon. I'll give you two examples of that, Andre. Those rear facing cameras that are now displayed in the rearview mirror, you know, the camera in mirror, that is a technology that's been around for like 14 years. And all of a sudden, like GM, I think, put it in the Bolt. And then everybody was like, oh my God, I got
to
have that.
We have to have it.
Yeah.
Almost everybody has it.
It's become ubiquitous. And the other one that's becoming ubiquitous and kind of is proliferating throughout the entire industry is rear wheel steering.
Yes.
Where you know, all of a sudden, people have figured out. And dude, I had a 300ZX back in the day that had rear wheel steering. But the newest version of that
steers
up to like 10 degrees.
Yes.
So it makes for a much, let's say, shorter turning radius. But like I said, the one that's bucking that trend is Tesla. So Tesla, you know, and BYD, actually. BYD is so integrated, dude. Build your dreams, a Chinese.
And also Rivian, to some extent. They want to build a lot of their components
by
themselves.
Yeah, they just went from buying Bosch Motors.
To
building their own.
Yeah.
BYD took it to such an extent that they actually have their own boats that ship their cars around the world. So they don't use, like,
Other people's boats.
They use their own boats. And what that does is it gives you control of the supply chain. And to some extent, it makes it a little bit more effective from a cost cutting. Even though I don't know, you know, there are these trends, right? So for a long time, just-in-time manufacturing was super, super, like the Japanese started it and it was super economical. And then, of course, the chip shortage hit and then you ran into a wall about, you know, head on into a wall because you couldn't get the components. And so you were missing one thing, which was a chip, and you couldn't build the vehicle. So for the most part, I don't know if that's still a thing in the auto industry. We're not that like tuned into what's actually going on behind the scenes in the manufacturing world of cars.
But there are like three or four huge tier one suppliers, right?
Yeah.
ZF is one of them. There's Bosch.
Yeah.
There's Magna.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, maybe several others.
A Canadian company. Not a German company.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
People think they're like German, but they're not.
Right. It's a Canadian.
It's Magna Steyr.
Yes. So well, there's a different.
I think they merged. Yeah.
Yes. That's in Austria, isn't it? They build G-Wagons.
And some BMWs and some Toyotas.
And used to be Fiskars.
And used to be Fiskars, yeah. All right, so what did you get to experience in Germany? What kind of technology did they roll?
Commercial tech.
Yeah, blow me away. What was like the coolest one? Give me like the highlight.
Well, the coolest thing the most impactful thing I think that they showed was an electrified trailer. We've been thinking about this for some time, right? Where a trailer actually has a power axle, that electric axle, that helps you propel, you know, the truck and trailer along and recoup energy at the same time.
So you're talking about a tractor trailer rig, in other words, a big rig trailer.
Semi truck.
Yeah, not like, you know, like your boat
not
trailer.
Not a pickup truck.
Okay.
Right. So yeah. We actually have a story about this. And so the hardest part of that, Roman, is how does the truck and trailer talk to each other?
Sure.
Because if you're on slippery surfaces and if the trailer tries to push you along, you could have a jackknife situation. You could have, you know, fairly dangerous driving conditions. So,
how do they talk to each other?
ZF figured it out.
Yeah.
So they have, and right now we're talking about big rig semi trucks with air brakes.
Yeah. If you're not watching this, up on the screen behind us is a DAF, big bullnose truck,
European cab over style truck.
That's not a bullnose, right? Bullnose would be the exact opposite. Like a Mack is a bullnose. That's a flat nose.
It's a flat nose or cab over because you're basically sitting on the engine.
Yeah.
They have ZF also makes very sophisticated brake control systems, and their brake control systems, of course, are air driven because it's a big truck, and also have ABS, and they also have kind of a computer brain on their braking system. So they're using some of that to so the trailer understands whether the driver is applying a brake or not. And they also, the trailer knows the speed of the vehicle, so it can actually help along as the driver accelerates or regen energy coming down a mountain or slowing down. And it all works seamless. I drove it on our test track, and I never, I think we went between about 30 kilometers per hour, which is about 20 miles per hour, to about 60 miles per hour. And I never felt uncomfortable. It felt normal. It felt like a truck was just driving it, you know.
So was the tractor diesel or was
diesel.
It electric?
Yeah,
so you had a diesel
semi with an electric trailer.
That's crazy.
It's a hybrid.
Yeah.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
So, it true is.
Right?
Yeah. How big of a battery does the trailer have?
So they didn't talk about complete like specs because it's not in production yet. The axle on the trailer produces upwards about 250 horsepower. And the battery doesn't have to be that huge because it just needs to be big enough for it to hold the recoup energy, right? So regen energy.
So more like a plug-in hybrid or like a traditional hybrid if you were talking cars.
Yeah, so it's not huge amounts.
So do you ever charge up the battery or does it just like recoup energy and then expand energy?
There could be both.
Okay.
There could be both. And they said if you don't charge the battery, you could save about 16% on fuel economy. If you do charge this battery on the trailer, you could recoup maybe 40%, which could be a huge amount if you own a fleet of trucks, right? But there's some downsides.
Okay.
Weight.
It's heavier, sure.
Weight and cost.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to, of course, account for that. And because this is not in production yet, they don't know exactly how big of a battery a customer like DAF or Nikola or another company would want.
All right, so I'm looking at this tractor trailer rig that they've got that you drove. So
yes.
the truck has two axles. The trailer has three axles. How many motors does a trailer have?
Just one.
Just one. So just on one of the axles.
Yeah, on one of the axles is one motor. So, and that's all you need. 250 horsepower is quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because a diesel engine like this produces what, between 500 and 650 horsepower, maybe. So it would be nice. Also, you could maintain higher speeds on the way up the mountain as well.
Sure.
So that's a really cool thing.
If you run out of, let's say, diesel, could the trailer actually push the truck? I wonder if it's got enough torque to do that.
It might have a little bit, but yeah. It doesn't work from a stop.
Okay, it only once the truck gets going.
Once you're moving. So you do have to have some sort of motion, because otherwise it would feel kind of weird if the trailer was just pushing you.
And does it work with electric tractors too?
Yeah.
Yeah, or like...
It doesn't need any other data link.
Okay.
So it's just using the brake system to figure out what's going on.
Oh, I see. So it's very simple.
Yeah, so you don't have to have another data cable that connects the trailer and the truck, which I thought was pretty cool. So that was kind of, I think, one of the highlights. They also showed, I mean, it was a full day, and everything was very, very regimented. The smallest vehicle they had there was an e-bike, a mountain bicycle with an electric ZF little gear set, electric motor. So they're now getting into small, tiny motors. They had the new tech. So they did a study, they told me, where what do you think is the quickest way to get somebody's attention? Is it to play a sound? Is it to flash a light? Or is it to touch them?
Flash a light.
They said it was to touch them.
Really?
So they're using the seatbelts.
Yeah.
You know how the seatbelt tensions when you're coming to a fast stop?
Yeah.
So they're using that seatbelt motor to tap you on the shoulder. So basically the seatbelt vibrates a little bit.
So kind of like GM's doing the vibrating seats.
Yeah.
Now they're vibrating the seatbelt.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And they said, according to them, it's the quickest way to get the driver to respond to a situation.
It sounds like it could be really annoying.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be. I mean, I find that those vibrating seats in the GM vehicle, until you get used to
them, it's a little
startling.
Sudden.
Yeah, yeah.
So now think about a seatbelt potentially vibrating your shoulder.
I don't know if I like that, Andre. It just seems like another nanny.
Actually,
nanny thing, that the thing is going to like do it when you don't want to do it, because it's programmed in a stupid way as opposed to us. I'm not saying this one is programmed in a stupid way,
but
there are parameters that don't understand that there are times when you don't need that to happen. A best example of that, I think, is in the seatbelt world, is when you're off-roading and the seatbelt locks and you're like...
When you're at an angle.
You know, either up or down, and you stop, and then you really want the seatbelt because you might roll the vehicle, and then there's nothing you can do to pull it out.
You know, it happened to me yesterday.
Tell me.
I was off-roading in the new CX-50.
Yeah, what happened?
Meridian.
Uh-huh.
I was going up Tombstone Hill, and I was with Gavin, who is one of our newest team members. And Gavin said, I'm not sure if you can clear this obstacle, as I was approaching it, you know, at a steep incline. So I had to undo my seatbelt. I got out. I checked it. It seemed okay. I got back in, and I couldn't put my seatbelt back on.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. And that's a example of that kind of thing happening in a circumstance that, you know, is
that
not anticipated.
Yeah.
And I worry if there might be, out of the millions of circumstances that thing needs to vibrate, there might be some where you don't want it vibrating, where it's going to do the exact opposite. It's going to become counterproductive. So I think it's cool. And then, you know, it's cool that they do these things, but sometimes with like anything that's new and kind of out there, you wonder, is this actually going to see production, right? There are just a lot of ideas that never actually become adopted because of various factors.
Here's something simple
that
will be adopted by every semi.
All right, let's hear it. Yeah.
Electric power steering.
Okay,
so
like
it's
the Tesla.
Hydraulic.
Yeah.
It's been hydraulic for decades.
How about not steer by wire, but electric?
Not steer by wire.
Okay, electric.
Or not hands-free.
Right.
But I think electric power steering, there's a couple of benefits.
Cars have had that for like 10 years or longer.
But you have to move big, heavy wheels, because we're talking about semi-trucks now.
Right, so big motors.
Big motors. It's usually higher voltage, so it's not 12 volts anymore. It could be 24 or 48 volt systems. But a couple of benefits. First of all, easier to turn.
Yeah.
Right, but also variable effort, so it could be a little bit more stable at high speeds. And because you don't have to rotate the pump, right, the steering pump, it could be more efficient because you're removing that burden from the engine it goes to the electric motor. So I think we'll see that in many different instances. Also, 360-degree cameras, they showed it around the whole trailer, which is quite unique because the trailers are of different sizes, different lengths. So that's really hard to do.
You know, I was reading an interesting story this morning, and it was about the fact that the industry has done a really poor job in marketing electric vehicles to women. You know, and I know like 95% of you out there are men, and so I think we're partially to blame for that as well. But let me explain what I'm saying, Andre.
Okay.
So what the story basically went and showed was like what percentage of women and what percentage of men use different criteria for their car buying decision. And men, for instance, it's all about, you know, styling and horsepower.
And sound, yeah.
Right? And these are all things that electric cars sometimes lack, or, you know, they lack the soul, right? These are things that men think about. Right, I want a car with a manual transmission.
I want an exhaust brake on my truck.
On your truck. I want to be able to like work on the thing under the tree on the weekend and show that I can fix it myself. Gosh darn it, unless I'm a computer scientist with, you know, a powerful computer, I can't do that. And the things that women tend to do, and this is, you know, from the article, so please don't paint me with a general blush, because obviously some women and some men have different, you know. But like in general, and the story pointed out that women tend to look at things like cost of maintenance.
Efficiency. Visibility. Safety,
yeah. You know, whether they have to fill it up or not. And yet these are the things that I think automotive reviewers and I would say manufacturers have completely ignored. And I think they're trying to sell. It's kind of like,
And women make majority of buying decisions, either for themselves or for their partner, which is a dude.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say it's like trying to sell, this is an old cliche, ice cubes. And I was going to say Eskimos, but you can't say that anymore. So I'm going to have to go with Native Canadians or Indigenous Canadians, right?
Native Soviet Northern
people. But it's actually worse than that, right? Yeah. It's like you've got this whole group of potential buyers out here who don't want ice cubes. So you're trying to sell ice cubes to people like that may potentially want them, but probably already have them in a different flavor.
Yeah.
But then you got this whole other group of people who want, you know, not ice cubes, but let's say they want lemonade, and yet you're not selling them the lemonade, even though you have it. And I think that was a valid article. And I know that because I read her comments, and I get so tired of, you know, EVs suck. It becomes politicized. And if you guys are out there listening to this, and your first reaction is, I'm a guy, and I think EVs suck because, you know,
XYZ.
I vote this, or you know, I have a giant, you know, this, and that's not, you know, for men with small that. I'm like, just first of all, enough, okay? Please, just drive one before you do that, and maybe you might have a wife or mother or daughter in your life. Look at it from her point of view. Never, you know, for me, until my wife actually pointed this out, I never really felt like uncomfortable going to gas stations, but there is a Shell near our house that is as sketchy as it gets. I mean, behind the counter, you know, is Zin chewing tobacco and cigarettes.
And there's a liquor store.
Next door there's a liquor store. It does not attract teetotalers.
Safety.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And next to that is kind of a homeless shelter, right? And this is a place where I don't want to go in the daytime, let alone at nighttime. And if you have an electric vehicle, and I know I'm starting to sound like an evangelist, but please kind of, you know, open your mind as opposed to just thinking with your other part of your body. If you have a woman in your life that you value their opinion, this is something that might be a buying decision for that, you know, person, because they might like the fact that they come home, plug it in, and never have to go to another gas station. And then, of course, the other thing we get with EVs, I'm also sick and tired of this. So this is my Roman rant. Now I'll get back to the truck stuff in a second. I'm tired. I'm just so tired of people using the one case, which is the inevitable, the red herring, which it always falls to, and that is you can't road trip them. You know, public charging is impossible. I live in an apartment, so I can't do, you know, night charging. I just get so tired of that. 99% of your driving is going to be around your house. Here's a statistic, Andre, that opened my eyes when I was a kid. I was in driver's ed class. You know, like where most accidents happen. It's within like 2 miles of your house. And the reason most accidents happen within 2 miles of your house is because that's where you drive the most. Statistically, you are within 2 miles of your house most of the time in your car. And so that's, if you're going to have an accident, that's where it's going to happen. And yet, somehow, you know, everybody judges the EV off the one case scenario that they might do once a year, which is driving to Aunt Irma's house, you know, for the 4th of July. So just chill, guys, chill, you know. I know people feel like they're being forced to buy EVs, but at this point, as far as I can tell, it's going the opposite way. So maybe just, you know, you've won and give it a break and, you know, see an EV, see if it actually works for you. Anyway, what else did ZF have? You're sitting there by a giant transmission in the picture behind
you. Yes, I'm not sitting next to an electric motor, Roman. I am sitting next to a giant, actually not that giant, but pretty big, 8-speed ZF automatic transmission that could go into a pickup truck, they said, for heavy duty. And we think, this is not confirmed by Ram, but we think it's going to go into a Ram heavy duty. They did show us the transmission. It is an 8-speed, and it is completely, you know, electronically controlled and can handle upwards of, well, over 1,000 pound-feet of torque. So I think it could work really well in the upcoming refresh of the Ram heavy duty. It's not confirmed by ZF or Ram. But here's another thing. You know how we talked about component manufacturers, you know, are in other vehicles, right? So if you and I started a truck company tomorrow, and if we wanted to create our own 8-speed automatic transmission, it would take us probably a decade to, you know, come up with one. ZF has an amazing reputation, right? They have transmissions in passenger cars, big trucks, buses. And you know what I asked them? I said, why not 9-speeds or 10-speeds? Because a Ford heavy duty has a 10-speed, a Chevy GM heavy duty has a 10-speed. They said 8-speeds is the perfect number.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, it happened. You know, I used to ride bikes a lot when I did triathlon. And it got a little out of control, right? It went from a compact triple on the back to a double, because all of a sudden, you know, people found that they really didn't need 30 gears to go up a hill, right? You were just splitting the difference.
You're adding complexity and some weight.
And not much functionality.
Yeah.
It's becomes a marketing thing, right?
So this will be a very interesting, I think, dude, because when this transmission comes into, you know, a popular segment here in North America, which is pickup trucks, I think it'll be a very interesting competition. And we're going to compare as closely as possible, okay?
The 10-speed in the Ford
versus an 8-speed.
In the Cummins.
Yes. Yeah,
fair enough.
So I think those were some of the highlights from Germany.
Sweet. All right. And then I had a chance to go and take the new Ranger Raptor up a very challenging hill. We have an off-road area that I've been dying to try in Colorado called Kelly Flats.
Yes, I've actually been wanting to go there too, and I haven't been able to.
It's kind of just a little bit northwest of Fort Collins, so it's a little bit of a haul from Boulder. I would say it's about 2 hours, and that's usually maybe an hour and a half. That's the reason we don't go that far, because it becomes about logistics of actually being able to go there, film, and then come back and doing it within, you know, the span of, you know, a regular workday. Anyway, so we got out there, and Onyx, our partner, calls it, I think, a 9 out of 10. But
which is insane.
Which is insane, yeah. And everybody has said that there are also bypasses, so you don't have
that's
to worry.
That's what I heard.
That's what we heard too. So we're like, okay. So we take, my friend James has a built 4Runner, and so the idea was not to compare the 4Runner, but to have, because this is a 9 out of 10, to have a buddy with us.
And in for safety, for help.
In case something goes wrong, and then he's got a winch on his rig. And so it's always good, especially when you're doing hard stuff. So we get in there, and the gatekeeper, the very first obstacle is already hard. So I'm like, this is going to be an interesting day. And then we get up to, it's called Heart Attack Hill, I believe. You remember Cliffhanger 2.0, where we almost rolled the vehicle a few times?
Yeah, so it's basically really steep and loose rocks too.
This is steeper with bigger rocks.
How is that possible?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. It is possible. I'll tell you how hard it is. So we get to the bottom of Heartbreak. I think it's hill. It could be mountain. I don't know. Anyway, and James says, I'm going to take the harder route. And there's like this big rock. And I'm like, James, I don't think you have enough clearance. And he goes, no, I can do it. I can place the vehicle at an angle. And keep in mind, he's got, we're both rolling on 33s at this point. He's got, you know, a several inch lift.
So not huge tires though.
No, not huge, yeah. But big enough. Old man Emu, completely protected underneath. And he pulls up, and you know how you have the front, the fair lead on a winch?
Yes.
Well, his is beautiful red and
beautiful hook,
aluminum,
right?
Yeah. And he rolls up to it, and he smashes that thing into a rock. And I'm like, James, I don't think you're going to go up this. And he, you know, you got to love the guy. I mean, he's fearless. He tried it, and there was no way he was going to get up it. So we're like, this is going to be quite the challenging day. And it's easy sometimes for a fun day to turn into like a death march where you're hating life because it's so hard and things are broken.
And also,
and now you're just struggling to get back down to the trailhead.
Yeah. And the weather is changing. There could be multiple factors, right?
Yeah. So we're like, okay, how about this? Before we take the brand new Ranger Raptor up there, and by the way, we did do damage up on the Ranger Raptor, and we hate damaging vehicles, but this was so hard, it was going to be inevitable. I'm like, James, me and you, let's go first and see if we can even do this before we send Tommy up with the Ranger Raptor. And Tommy's a better off-roader in the family, so I was going to do the scouting with James. So we crawled and, you know, just basically worked our way up this hill using every bit of, like, knowledge and patience
and,
that James has, and every bit of, you know, ground, every inch of ground clearance and approach angle. And, you know, that Toyota doesn't have a locking front, which the Ranger Raptor does. And in this kind of circumstance, that's, you know, you don't usually want to lock the front. But when it gets steep and deep like that, it really does help. It's hard to turn, right? Because then you have the rear locked and the front locked, so the truck kind of goes where it wants. But we made it to the top, and now I'm looking down, and Tommy's this little tiny truck, because it's a long way up. And to his benefit, Tommy, you know, ran it like a trooper. But the whole point of the story isn't that we tried something hard and the Ranger...
But there's a video of this, too.
There's a video. And the Ranger just killed it, which was great. I mean, you know, the thing is much more capable than I think I would ever need in my life. At least, you know, there's a reason it's called Heart Attack Hill, because it is that frightening and that hard. But we're like, okay, phew, we made it to the top. Now we'll take the bypass. And in some ways, it's easier to go up than it is to go down, because with up, if it gets too hard or too steep,
you can stop.
With down, gravity's pulling you, right? And it turned out that the bypass on the way down was actually harder than the actual Heartbreak Hill itself. And that's where we actually did all the damage. You know, the Ranger Raptor, like the Raptor, has these kind of, they're like coated steps, right?
Yeah.
Like bed.
But they're not like tubular sliders. They're actual steps.
Yeah. And so we took a giant chunk of that coating off the step, because there was nothing else we could do.
Yeah.
And we pretty much, you know, did some trail rash on the brand new wheels on one side. But I didn't care. Tommy felt horrible. I was just happy to go down. And then me and James were going down kind of, you know, because he's that truck is like 8 years old. And so the older the truck, the less you probably care. Yeah. Or the more fearless you are, because, you know, as opposed to a brand new truck, right?
Right.
Because that first scratch, oof, is the painful one. But there was like two ways to go, and I stupidly recommended James that we took the right side, and of course we should have gone the left side. And the right side turned out to be this like pyramid of a rock that you had to drive over, and it just clawed the underside of the 4Runner like you wouldn't believe.
But
like,
he's got all the skid plates, right?
If you didn't have skid plates, you would have torn out your drivetrain. It was incredible. And I was just listening to this thing go across the rock with
scraping.
Like, you know, it was so painful, and I felt so bad. And James was like so cool about it. He was like, hey, don't worry about it. And then luckily Tommy was able to take the left side as opposed to the stupid right side that I chose. But anyway, it's probably one of the hardest trails we've done in Colorado since we stopped running Cliffhanger 2.0, because, you know, when we busted that front drive shaft.
Well, actually, drive shaft.
Yeah, we decided that it was a little too dangerous. So if you guys want to watch that video, it'll be on all TFL. And then, yeah, we might do it again. I'm not sure. I was pretty happy to be back at the trailhead at the end of the day.
Well, it sounds like you need more clearance. I mean, overall.
35s would have been nice.
Yeah. I love the Ranger Raptor. I also took it with Nathan up Argentine Pass.
Yeah.
So we'd also have a video on alltfl.com with that. And the other vehicle was the GMC Canyon 84X AEV edition on 35s.
That would be better, yeah.
And it has just another inch and a half of clearance, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually helpful to avoid a lot of different scratches.
Yeah,
and damage.
Yeah, I think there's a parallel to be drawn between like these incredibly capable off-road trucks and incredibly capable like on-road sports cars, right? If you buy a Corvette, chances are you're probably not going to take it on the racetrack. Or if you buy a Z06, you're probably not going to actually go and, you know, put it in harm's way. And same thing with like the Raptor or the Ranger Raptor or that AT4X.
Yeah.
It was a Bison edition, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
AAV.
Yeah. Yeah. At $70,000+, you're probably not going to be doing what,
it was really meant to do. Right?
But yeah. Then when you do what it's meant to do, it's just mind-blowing how good and capable they are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt about the Ranger Raptor, just how much performance is like built into that truck for the off-road world. Anyway, let's talk about Toyota. So let's start with defining why Toyota's reputation for reliability may be canceled. And that is they've had a recall, voluntary recall, of 100,000 Toyota Tundras. Tell me about what's going on with that, and then we'll talk about what the implications are.
Yeah, it's basically sometimes rough running engine or engine shutdown or basically engine failure. They voluntarily recalled, like you said, about almost 100,000 Tundras and a couple, several thousand of LX600s.
Same engine.
Same engine, which is a 3.4-liter twin-turbo V6. There's other questions about, well, other vehicles use this engine, like the hybrid Tundras, Sequoias, GX550s. You know, that engine is not just in the Tundra and the LX600. So that's why, you know, I think people are having, you know, second thoughts about this. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of good videos. There's like Toyota master mechanics talking about this. There are outlets.
Yeah, I don't want to go into the details of this, but basically during the manufacturing of the engine, Toyota says that there were
some debris left in the engine.
And that caused the veins, I guess, you know, the capillaries where oil flows to get
and
clogged up.
Main bearing, which is basically where the crankshaft rotates and sits. Main bearing failure. And tolerances are so tight in these new engines, right? And oil is so important to lubricate all these connections. So when the main bearing goes, the engine goes.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the issues. And then the other, of course, is that there have been some pretty documented failures of Tacoma
with the 8-speed
manual. Manual or automatic transmission?
Automatic.
Automatic. Because our friend Steve had a manual and that failed.
Yes. Right,
the trucking.
Should we talk briefly about this? So,
well, he did some. I was watching his video, but he like downshifted from, I think his dad downshifted from fifth to third.
To third.
Yeah.
But Toyota thinks they almost tried to hit first, from fifth to first.
I don't want to get into that controversy. I don't know, but it caused the transmission to go kablooey.
The clutch did.
Yeah. Sorry, the clutch. And what happened with the automatics?
The automatics, there's no recall yet, or at all right now on the new Tacoma automatic. But there are some rough shifting and transmission failures after not so many miles. Like we're talking about 1,000 miles, 2,000, 5,000 miles. So early on in the life of some of these Tacomas, there are documented complaints on NHTSA.gov about automatic failures as well.
So let me give you kind of my take on this, right? So you've got two camps, basically. So in one camp, you've got the people who say that, you know, Toyota has this reputation of quality, reliability, dependability. And this is something that has happened in the past, which is true. You know, when that V8 in the Tundra first came out, they
was also recalled.
If you remember, the Tacoma had a recall for the entire frame, right? They would change up because the frame would rust. And that what Toyota will do in Toyota fashion is they will identify the problem, they will methodically fix the problem, and they will, unlike any other company, you know, raise their hand. This is true. This is a voluntary recall. And they will work their way through all of the issues until the truck is darn near perfect or as perfect as can be.
And right? I think that's why a lot of people respect Toyota as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's worthy to do that.
And then the other camp, of course, are people who kind of Schadenfreude, which is a German word for having pleasure in pain or pleasure in misfortune, will say, you know, we told you so. This is all BS. Toyota's reputation for reliability was just
down the drain.
It was just a big smokescreen. It was always more PR than actual fact. now you can't trade in your Tundra because dealers aren't taking them, and they just go to the worst case scenario. And I think what you have today that you didn't have, let's say 10, 15 years ago, is social media, where both of these arguments get blown up, and I would say blown up beyond proportion.
And amplified.
And amplified.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why we're having this conversation, because you know, if this were 20 years ago, where you know people would be talking about this, and then Toyota would be working its way through and fixing it, it would be one thing. But now you've got people who are you know, affected, who have an axe to grind, who want to make this as public as possible, and then you've got YouTubers and influencers who know that, you know, by crying wolf they get more views than by crying not wolf, and so this has turned into this giant furball of bad publicity for Toyota, and I suspect the truth lies somewhere in between.
Yeah, and also I think we still don't know what the ultimate solution they're going to propose, but all roads point to, especially in the Tundra case, engine replacement.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to be expensive for Toyota to do for these affected trucks. But I think it's probably the best solution, because rebuilding an engine is also could be error prone, right?
How expensive is it to replace 100,000 engines? That's got to be a big number.
That's an insane number.
Yeah.
But also, Toyota is probably the largest manufacturer in the world.
Yeah.
And probably one of the most profitable as well. So if anybody can do it, you know, they can do it, and they need to stand up for their product, like you said, and they do. So we'll have to wait and see.
So it's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like what happened with the Bolt, where GM stepped up and replaced all the battery packs. And then
expensive was that? That was expensive.
If you were a lucky owner of one, you were inconvenienced, or in some cases, much more than that, because you had to leave it parked outside.
Because it was a risk of
and
fire.
I know inconvenience sounds like I'm making the thing less important. I'm sure if I owned one and I had to park it outside.
Well, if it was the only car you
owned, I'd be pretty pissed off, yeah. But then at the end of the day, you got a brand new battery. And same thing with these guys. Let's say you've had a Tundra and it's not inconceivable that somebody's put
2 years old.
Yeah, put 50, 60, 70,000 miles. All of a sudden, you know, you take it into your dealer and you end up with, you know, a 2-year-old Tundra with a brand new engine, which I think, you know, done by the dealer, you know, in hest of the manufacturer, is a pretty good deal. So I think there's good and bad. Like I said, I think the truth lies somewhere in between. And if I were a Toyota Tundra owner, I don't think I'd be rushing to sell my Tundra, right? If there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, because we don't know the ultimate solution yet.
Yeah.
So don't really, I mean, I think the best advice is don't rush, because you could lose money right now.
This is probably the worst time to sell.
Yeah.
So if there's no issues with it, just keep driving it. And if something does occur, then, you know, then you'll hopefully deal with it and know that Toyota will cover it. Now, if I were buying a Toyota Tundra, that's a different situation.
Second thought, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I might think twice about it at this time until there's a solution.
But go on any forum, on any truck, any car. You know, F-150 cam phaser issues, right, on their EcoBoost engines. GM 8-speed failures. Remember those?
Yes.
Ram, gosh, RRM Cummins has had how many recalls? I want to say like 7 or 8.
I don't know. Yeah, and I think you said it earlier. Modern engines are so sophisticated, right?
So precise.
So precise. Yeah. The tolerances are so low, and the technology has now gotten to be so complicated that there is a much higher chance of them failing in some way that the manufacturer cannot anticipate. And I think a good example of that is our Tacoma. Right, we just did an interview with Sheldon, and he basically said that, you know, what happened with our Tacoma wasn't driver error. It was a weird set of circumstances. Now, whether you believe that or not, I'll leave it up to you. But a weird set of circumstances where because they've never seen before.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was not enough traction, and I was in, according to them, potentially the wrong mode for the situation. Then what happened was, you know, when we exploded the front diff, because all the torque went to the front wheel, and then the traction control system clamped down on the brakes, sending all that torque somewhere, and where it sent
it
was
nowhere to go,
into the diff, which went kaplooey. And that, of course, has to do with, once again, code and programming. But modern engines and modern transmissions are so much more complicated than in the past that maybe this is a reason we're seeing these pretty significant failures on the part of manufacturers who've been building cars for a long time. And this isn't just, let's just be fair, the mechanical part of this tends to be more on the legacy manufacturers, right? But there's also software failures, like with the Blazer. We just had the Blazer, and that rollout, I think anybody would say, was the Blazer EV was a nightmare for GM.
Yeah, it was.
Because they had to do a stop sale because the
software... The screen was freezing.
Yeah, basically, and then everything's in the screen, so once the screen goes, you can't turn your headlights on. You know,
you can't control the radio.
You can't put it in drive. You know? I mean, I think that has a way to put in drive without the screen. It's got a button transmission, but still, right, it made for a stop sale. So we're pushing both in the electric world and in the gas world, we're pushing the technology way beyond where it used to be. And I think that's where a lot of people are saying, I want my good old V8, which you can still get in a Ford, which you can still get in a Chevy, a 5.3 or a 6.2. And so those options are still out there. If you don't want to, you know, have the greatest...
Well, but those engines, once again, have complicated tech as well.
They
have cylinder deactivation,
which also cause issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you are really adverse to new tech, and I'm not. I love new tech.
I'm probably an early
adopter. But you should buy probably 20-year-old, I don't know, truck with more simple tech.
Okay, but having said that, Andre, you and I have been around long enough to know that when we were younger, a vehicle, maybe not a truck, but a vehicle basically had about 100, 250 miles of life.
Maybe 100,000.
Yeah, yes. After like 10 years, 100,000 miles, it was
done.
Yeah. It was done. It was done, right? You could sell it for a couple hundred or a couple thousand, but that was it. And yet today, the average new car costs $48,000, and the average person keeps their car for 12 years. And the reason is because these vehicles, and I think this applies to trucks as well, while they are mechanically sophisticated, once they're sorted, they just last a lot longer.
Yeah.
And you got this
decades. They can last decades.
And you got this weird combination of vehicles are much better, have much longer longevity, and yet at the same time, new car prices have become so high that it's kind of forcing people and truck prices. I don't want to be just cars because trucks have gotten way out of control in terms of their price. But they've become so expensive that people are holding onto their vehicles longer because they can.
Yeah.
So before we say the sky is falling, there are a lot of benefits to all this new technology, and one of the biggest ones, of course, is fuel economy.
Yeah.
And it's ironic.
And power, too.
Ironic, and here I go back. I'm going to go back to electric. But it's ironic. For the most part, the stuff that's failing with these trucks is not the electric part of it. Let's talk about the Tundra hybrid, right? It's not the electric hybrid system that's failing. It's the traditional.
That's really unfortunate.
ICE component. Because the electric component has no moving parts except for like one, whereas an internal combustion engine has
lots of rotating
hundreds, maybe thousands of parts. I don't know.
Lots of rotating parts.
Yeah, lots, yeah.
Yeah, and moving parts.
And then, of course, the other shoe that has yet to fall, which people are worried about, is they haven't recalled the Toyota Tundra Hybrid, which in essence has the same engine, except it has the hybrid powertrain. So the question is, did that come from a different factory, or is there something about it that's unique that would keep it from failing? Or is it Toyota just not wanting to recall more than 100,000 trucks at any given time? And I don't know. So would you buy a Tundra? Let me ask you that.
Right now?
Yeah.
No, I probably wouldn't. But also, comparing the Tundra to every other pickup truck, because I would have to.
Yeah.
Right? I would have to compare it. And by the way, the Titan is no more. So we can't compare the Titan. They discontinued the Titan production. So I would have to go by, other capabilities, efficiency, other features. So I don't know. I probably wouldn't buy a Tundra this.
I would buy a Tundra. But this is coming from a guy who bought a Range Rover recently. So so I just take the dice and roll them. Because, I would buy it because I'll tell you why I'd buy it. I would definitely not even hesitate to buy a Tacoma. I think
We used to own a Tundra.
Yeah. We used to own a Tundra.
Yeah.
And we used to own a Tacoma. And I think, in general, because of all this social media, a lot of these issues are way overblown. We're looking at what? Toyota's saying 1% to 3% failure rate. On these engines.
Yes.
Which, you could say, Toyota's just, downplaying the severity of this. Why would they recall 100,000 if it's 1% to 3%? But on the other side of the coin, it could be Toyota just being Toyota, saying, you know what? Even if there's a 1% to 3% chance of this engine failing, we're going to go and do the right thing.
Very public thing.
Yeah.
A recall is a very public thing.
And once upon a time, when Toyota did that, because of lack of social media, there was kind of this understanding, well, these people are standing behind their product, and I appreciate the fact that they're standing behind their product, and I'm going to, you know, stand behind it as well. Today, of course, you get the exact opposite. So instead of people saying, well, Toyota's, you know, doing this to be conservative and to make sure that their customers aren't stranded, you get, you know, the sky's falling and don't buy a Tundra. So I would not hesitate to buy a Tundra. And I would not, and I'm not a Toyota apologist. I just think.
And by the way, we're not paid by any manufacturer. No. Why do people keep saying this? That we're paid by
manufacturers? Because there's everybody there. There's a lot of people out there that are, I suspect, paid by manufacturers. We don't get paid by manufacturers. We don't invest. We have no, like,
right.
We have no Toyota stock. I mean, we're just, you know, sitting here reviewing them. But I think the company has been around long enough, and I think the core of that company has always been reliability. And so I think they understand deep down in their DNA that this is what their value is, right? This is what their core competency and value is. And it's not just something that they have to do because the government's putting a gun to their head and saying you have to recall it. So that's why I don't think I would hesitate to buy a Tundra. And I certainly wouldn't hesitate to buy a Tacoma. We did. And I think the transmission stuff might be overblown. But it could just be, you know, a set of unhappy circumstances. Or like the people out there are saying, you know, it could be that they're, you know, selling too many vehicles because everybody wants a hybrid right now. And so maybe the production is you know, has been rushed. But I don't think the Tacoma or the Tundra were rushed. I mean, how long was it before the Tacoma? It was, what, 14 years before, since the last version?
And also...
How long since the new version of the Tundra?
It was
so like a decade.
The Tundra was 2007 through 2021.
Yeah.
That was, what, 14 years?
Yeah.
The Tacoma was like 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
So, no, they're not being rushed. You know, they're not redesigned every year. And also, the Tacoma, remember, we were supposed to get it in December. We got it in February. So it wasn't like Toyota was rushing and, you know, shoving them out the door. They actually took their time and actually did that. So also, I want to say... I like to gamble, and I think we're living through a great time because we have vehicles like the Ranger Raptor with 405 horsepower and the midsize pickup truck, which is incredible, amazing technologies, and we have, you know, very capable trucks like, you know, Toyota trucks and GM and Ram trucks. You know, the Hurricane, we tested that Hurricane. We talked about it in the beginning. It did a 5.6 second 0-60 at a mile above sea level.
I think the Hurricane proves what the EcoBoost proved, which is you can have Eco or Boost.
But right? Not often both.
But not often both. You can have power or you can fuel efficiency, but it's very rare to get them both in the same package.
Dude, I think Nathan and you and I reviewed the Audi R8.
Wow, that's
manual.
A shift. Yeah.
Remember, this was 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Right?
Yeah.
And I remember us running a 5.2 second 0-60 in a supercar
yeah.
And being shocked.
And now a truck will do
now
that.
Now a truck is almost doing that.
I know, it's incredible.
So, hey, yeah, it is incredible.
I have a prediction.
What?
I predict that electric car sales are actually going to increase instead of decrease. And I'll tell you why.
Why?
I know we're off trucks again. And I will... I will say the same thing about electric trucks. I think they'll increase because of this giant swing away from electrified vehicles. Tommy's doing a story right now where you can basically lease a Leaf for $1,776. Yeah, so it's for the 4th of July. And you'll be listening to this after the 4th of July, but it's still going on. For $17 down and $76 a month.
Wow.
And you could do...
That's super low.
And the same thing applies to the... EV6, I think, not 17, but it's like, you know.
But low numbers.
I want to say like $1,500. Yeah. It's basically, and the Nissan Ariya, right? We're basically for less than $6,000 a year, which is less than you probably spend on your phone. And Kyle pointed this out in one of his videos. You can lease these really good electric cars for 2 years for about $3,000 a month for 10,000 miles a year. And I think a lot of people, no matter how much, you know, the comments say they hate them, all of a sudden this notion of having a car to drive for less than the cost of your phone and having it
becomes very attractive.
Very attractive. And I think that will drive electric vehicle sales more than anything else, more than what your political beliefs are, more than what, you know, you think about the fact that electric cars are blah, blah, blah. The fact that you can get a vehicle which will do what you need it to do for such a low amount of money and will have no maintenance cost associated with it is going to increase electric car. And then the media will be like, oh my God, electric car sales are up. Why is that? And then, of course, the pendulum will swing the other way. And that's my prediction.
Yeah, and I heard industry experts say that electric vehicle sales, all trucks and cars, is moving at about increasing about 2% a year.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard industry experts say. So 2% a year is not a huge growth, but still it's growth, right? Yeah. It's growing.
Yeah. And I know that you guys didn't come here for electric truck or car talk.
No.
Yeah. But the reason we talk about it so much is because it is such a fundamental shift. Imagine if we were living during the time when we went from horses
to cars,
right? Chances are if we had
Facebook back then.
Yeah.
And Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what would have been covered in the media, right?
Yes.
Right? It would have been those little newspaper guys.
Right? Extra, extra,
extra, extra.
Your horse is dead.
extra. Your horse may no longer be.
Your horse.
Your horse.
The government is taking your horse.
And so, you know, a lot of people are out there like, don't shoot the messenger, you know, just because we're covering the news that is breaking right now. So let's wrap this thing up in the last few minutes that we have left. And let's talk about the new
Cummins. Cummins.
Yeah, because I see you've got that up there. So tell me about the new Cummins, Andre. What do we know about it?
So right now, just kind of rumors, uh-huh. Nothing confirmed. But you know how they have two versions of the Cummins now. They have a standard output and a high output.
Yes.
And the rumor from Mopar Insiders says that they're going to consolidate it to one engine offering for Cummins. And according to that rumor, still the V8 gas engine will remain. You know, people think that the V8 will go away.
Is that the 6.4?
Yeah.
Hemi?
But yeah. GM has a gas V8 in their heavy-duty trucks, and Ford does too. Actually, Ford has two gas V8 engines in their lineup. So
the Coyote!
They're going to consolidate. They're going to offer more power. There's also a rumor that displacement will go up. You know, 6.7 right now, the Cummins, could be something greater, something bigger.
Well, these are the king of trucks,
for these trucks, you know, the trucks that tow long distance, diesel is still king.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just the bottom line. It's energy dense. You can go long distance. You can do it efficiently, and it's still king. Maybe a hybrid is possible. I think a diesel hybrid would be something very, very interesting, but it would also be costly, right? Because it's not going to be free. Adding a hybrid system to this truck, but still, it could be possible.
I predict we'll be talking a lot about Ram because, of course, Ram has their electric truck coming out, and they have the range extender as well.
And this heavy duty coming
out,
too.
So there'll be a lot of Ram news in the near future.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm wondering if we should trade our Cummins on the new Cummins, as I'm sure you're wondering.
That sounds really enticing.
We'll roll the dice again, Andre, and see if our...
Do you know how many Cummins were recalled? We talked about it. An emission scandal.
Yeah, I know.
Emissions, yeah.
But that's what we do.
Yeah. Okay.
We buy trucks so you don't have to.
Or we buy them early so you don't have to.
So you know what's going on with them.
Yes.
Anyway, guys, thanks for joining Andre and myself. Andre, thank you for flying all the way to Germany because I know that was not an easy trip for a couple days and bringing back all that news about the newest tech that ZF is offering. And thank you guys for watching. And if you want to help support the team or you want to buy
t-shirts.
One of our new t-shirts.
Sorry, I don't have one yet.
Yeah.
Right now.
Head on over to All TFL or just click on the link below and we shall see you next time. Ciao.
Thank you.